Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of this podcast with Damian here today. I just wanted to begin by saying that I'm really grateful for everybody who listens to this podcast because it's amazing speaking from this position and just having people who are listening to your conversations and being able to speak to people from across the nation, congressmen, congresswomen, candidates, professors, you name it. We've been able to speak to these people and gain perspective ourselves. So it's been an amazing year, guys. Happy Thanksgiving. It's just we are so grateful, me and Damian both, for people who listen to us, people who come on the podcast, and we just think it is an amazing opportunity that we've had over the past couple of months.
Yeah, definitely. And we wouldn't have this opportunity if it wasn't for you guys listening. You guys motivate us and inspire us. We appreciate all the messages. If you guys have been following us on social media, at Politician Show on both Instagram and Twitter, you guys would have seen, me, especially on Instagram and on Snapchat. You guys can follow us on Snapchat, too, at Politician. You would have seen me just, thanking you guys. It's been awesome, the support that you guys have been sending us, on Instagram, especially the DMs every once in a while that come in telling us that you guys love what we're doing or the comments. We really appreciate it, and it really keeps us going. So we're excited for this upcoming year. It's great. Oh, man, this year's been the weirdest year. It's been, it's been like the fastest year, the worst year, the best year.
Yeah.
It's been such an odd year.
Yeah. I mean, we're grateful for it all. It's the ups and downs, whatever comes at us, it's all a working journey. We get through it and we achieve more, aspire to achieve more. I think that, I had my first podcast dream last night, Damien. I had a dream that me and you switched positions. I did the intro and you did the outro. I don't know why that was so significant, but it was to me. And it just shows how much of a mentality and how much of a lifestyle change this has been, coming to the podcast and talking, because it really does. I was telling my mom, I was like, it really is fun. It really is something that, I do for fun. It's not about me talking about politics, learning about politics. It's about me just having conversations and gaining perspective. And I think that it really is a fun opportunity. And you guys have facilitated that. And I really do appreciate that for all of our listeners today. But I want to move into our conversation, maybe something on a little more of a unifying note. I heard Joe Biden speak today. And I always talk about his speeches because I analyze them a little bit, hyper-analyze them, whatever you want to call it. But I read a speech, the transcript, and he said, we're not at war with one another. We're at war with COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And I think that is an important message to deliver, because right now, even on Thanksgiving, we're so divided based upon political ideologies. I think we have to just come together. And the point there is, we have to come together to solve these issues. There's no other way around it. You can't be divided and solve COVID-19. You can't be divided and solve climate change. You can't be divided and solve racism and solve bigotry, because those things prey on being divided, right? Division empowers these things. So us being unified gives us the unique opportunity to really solve these issues. And I think that we have to remember that even on this day, because this day is all about coming together and appreciating what we've got. And I think that as Americans, all we've got is one another.
Yeah, definitely. And before I jump into my take on that, I'd be so excited to just start filming this podcast, because you were talking about COVID and stuff. Start filming this podcast in person.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it would change the whole dynamic of the conversation that we're having. And hopefully we do get, some of the things that Joe Biden promised. I personally loved that speech. I think that beyond, politics, Again, gotta start, you know, gotta say it every time. It's my thing. I'm Damien centrist Galvin here. I'm centrist, so analyzing this from a centrist perspective or centrist point, you got to throw the politics aside when you're talking about the speech. There wasn't really, I think, any like political agenda with the speech. I'm trying to think. I maybe you would be able to point something out. I don't even think that he mentioned any of his policies. Any controversial policies. I think that the speech was just exactly what you kind of wanted from a president right now, a president-elect technically, but from a president right now. I mean, that's what you want. And it was a very stark contrast to the way that Donald Trump has been speaking for the last 4 years. Again, it feels like a sigh of relief every time that we hear Joe Biden speak. And again, this isn't coming from a partisan perspective. You might not be liking what he's saying, but the way that he says it is definitely a lot more different than the way that the president says it. Now, on the other side, some people may not like what the president of the United, Donald Trump, is saying, but they might like his policies. The part that really stuck out for this stuck out of the speech for me was the part where he started talking about Bo, and he started talking about.
And I'll read you that line.
Yeah.
The line is, "I know that this time of year can be especially difficult. Believe me, I know." And he said, "I remember that first Thanksgiving, that empty chair, the silence takes your breath away." That was his beginning line in that whole address.
Yeah, and I think that line, it was, it just resonated. You know, I personally, I've been lucky enough, and, you know, I'm thankful for it on Thanksgiving, that I haven't lost anyone to COVID-19, you know, personally, no one in my immediate family, no one that sits at that Thanksgiving table with me. But I'm sure that, you know, someone listening to this podcast won't be able to say the same. And, you know, maybe it's not just about COVID-19. You know, that's not the only battle. And sometimes I think that we kind of have tunnel vision when it comes. It's COVID-19. We have so many other battles as Americans. Joe Biden, I think, emphasized that in his speech. He mentioned, you know, beating cancer. You mentioned climate change. I'm sure that he did yesterday. You know, how many people, you know, sitting here listening to this podcast have lost someone to cancer? You know, maybe are struggling with a family member having cancer, or they have cancer themselves as they're listening to this. So, you know, it's important to remember the fact that we are Americans, and that we are, you know, we're not only in a war against, COVID-19, you know, we're in a war against many things. I mean, we were in a battle for our own democracy over the past couple of months.
And
we still are. And I think that he outlined that very well in his speech. I think it was an overall good speech, to be honest. I think it was a great speech.
Yeah. And Damien has high standards, so that's a good thing coming from him.
Yeah.
But I think that what we talked about on Monday, we both talked about the fact that President Trump could have used the coronavirus as this kind of war. And he could have used it as like saying, motivating the American people to come together and unify, to support themselves. And wartime presidents always loved and respected. And I think that, but speaking solely politically, what we talked about on Monday happened during that speech. He talked about America is not going to lose this war. We'll get our lives back. That's a wartime president speaking to the American people, unifying the American people against that invisible enemy that we so fondly reference, not fondly, but we so constantly refer to the coronavirus as that invisible enemy. And I think that what he did during that speech was empathize with the American people. And I think that we've been needing empathy for a very, very long time, especially when and I'm saying this, you know, it is very, very clear and blatant, right? It's that pushing the coronavirus down as it's nothing. And Trump and Don Jr. have done it as well on major news channels during rallies. Trump is like, this virus has hurt almost nobody. 220,000 Americans have not just been hurt, they've been dead. They're not even on Earth anymore. Yeah. And beyond that, how many people does that influence, right? They may be breadwinners. They may be family members. They have cousins. They have immediate family members. It influences so many more people than just that 220,000 member tally. And so when you talk about the wide-ranging impact of this virus, it's not just those who have died. It's those who have lost a family member. It's those who have lost a breadwinner, those who are on the streets homeless because of the jobs they've lost. It's not just the economy is crumbling, and we have to consider that it's not just people dying, it's people getting hurt. And I think that when you go to Thanksgiving, people don't have the money to have a great Thanksgiving. People don't have the money to have a great Christmas. That's why me and Damien are doing the toy drive thing to help families out during this terrible time. It's to consider that and empathize with that. And so when a person says, like President Trump said, when he said that this virus has hurt almost nobody, it really does belittle the claims of millions of Americans. And it hurts to see. And so when the thing is that Joe Biden's been through so much to where he really can empathize with the American people, and using his own personal sentiment into that thing, I'm sure it was hard. Because you saw him pause it multiple times saying that whole speech. Yep. And it's not just him reciting politically motivated lines. He's talking about his son's death. And if you know anything about Joe Biden cares about his son's death, and he cares about, as any American would, and he cares about issues that personally matter to him. And the fact that he opened up to the American people, I like to say that people open up when they talk about deep things. They talk through their worst times, and they go through those with the other person. I think Joe Biden was helping the American people become more acquainted with Joe Biden by helping them go through the most deep things and telling them they had somebody to lean on, a shoulder to lean on, and hope for the future. And I think that as any other person, not even just a president, me and Damien talking, and I want to help him out, and I want to alleviate his pain, I would reference it back to my pain and be like, well, I've been through this too. And I think that we can both achieve better. And I think that as any good friend would, Joe Biden was being a good friend, and in turn, he was being a good president-elect. And he's speaking to a narrow corridor here, because millions of Americans still don't recognize Joe Biden as president. On Thanksgiving Day, you saw, I believe it was today or yesterday, President Trump came out, and he spoke through a phone to the judge at one of his trials for the election. And he spoke about how, well, we should have won this election. We won it by a lot. And it's just on Thanksgiving Day, he can't even accept the results of an election. And the fact of the matter is that him saying we won this election by a lot is like comparing saying the sky's red, right? Saying the sky's red. You can't say these kinds of things because it utterly contradicts the American people's will. And so I would just say to anybody listening, consider the facts and don't be ungrateful, because I think the number one sign of being ungrateful is not being able to accept your loss and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's the simple truth. It's not being able to appreciate what you had, right? And instead of coming out and saying, because, you know, the whole time you were thinking, I was thinking about, you know, what Joe Biden said about Bo. And I was thinking, you know, the president could have done the exact same thing with his brother. But I feel like it's just his pride and his ego that doesn't allow him to. And what I mean by that is Donald Trump could have said, you know, instead of saying this virus has merely affected no one, I don't know necessarily. Actually, I can Google it here. I don't know necessarily if Donald Trump's brother was ever a confirmed COVID death.
He wasn't a confirmed COVID death.
Okay. Nonetheless, that's completely irrelevant to the conversation at hand. Yeah. It would have added a little bit more had he been a confirmed COVID death, but it still is the same thing. This, you know, Donald Trump could have said, this year, I lost a family member. You know, this year, there will be someone missing, you know, from the Thanksgiving table. I understand what it's like, you know, to lose someone in that capacity. And 250,000 Americans this year are going to be able to relate to that. But no, instead of being thankful for the last 4 years, and it's like he forgets that he wouldn't be able to do this without his constituents and the people that elected him and the American people. It's like he forgets it. It's like he feels that he's entitled to his job.
Right.
And you know, he's been, I think that the issue is that he's been entitled to everything growing up, right? He was entitled to a will. He was entitled to the $1 million loan that his father gave him. He was entitled to all these things. He isn't entitled to that office. No one is. Every single person that has sat in there, the 46 men, unfortunately just men for now, but I'm sure that we will be able to say men and women in the near future that have sat in that office have all worked for that job. And they've all been elected through a democratic process, the one that he is now refusing to acknowledge because it does not favor him. On the contrary, the democratic process shows that the exact thing that he's scared of, the fact that he's not entitled to that seat. That seat is not his. It's not Trump 2024. It's not Trump 2028. It was Trump 2020, and that was an expiration date. It was over.
Yeah.
He's going to be out of office in January. And instead of being thankful, you're right, he's complaining like a little baby on the sidelines. And that's not even, you know, that would be, I think, offensive to babies, frankly.
Yeah.
And I genuinely mean that, because if I had a kid, and I think Obama said this on the 60 Minutes interview, he wouldn't accept this type of loss from his kids. I mean, imagine being such a sore loser as a, not even a grown man, as the president of the United States. He's a grown man. He is, what, 74? 74.
He's not grown. He's an old man. He's been through life. He's been through everything. And it what you're saying, it ties back to the idea that, I mean, what kind of example is this president setting for our kids?
Yeah,
ourselves?
We talked about that
last
time. We
are Generation Z. We talked about it almost every single episode since our teacher said that. And it stands true today. I mean, it's the example that this president is putting on us, because we all look up as we're a kid. A lot of people, when they're like 10, 8 years old, they want to be president of the United States. I did too. And I was like, well, Obama was my idol. And I was like, I want to speak like Obama, act like Obama, talk like Obama. When people look at Trump, what do they look at? I mean, he's in some circumstances, I don't want to say this, but he's worse than a child in how he acts, how he carries himself, how he responds to loss. We've seen that. And so when you make the allegations of like the sky is red, no kid says the sky is red. Trump is saying the sky is red by saying that he won the election by a lot when he did, in fact, lose by over 6 million votes. I don't know the exact tally, but 6 million is probably a very small number compared to how much he lost by. But he lost by a lot. Popular, electoral votes, either one of them. I don't know how you look at it, but he lost by a lot. And so I think that when you talk about Trump using his own personal loss to confront with the American people what it feels like to lose somebody, you could have just taken his example of himself, right? He also went through a very bad case of the coronavirus, which he tried to suppress, but we know that because he used an experimental cocktail. He used drugs that weren't even approved by the FDA for himself, which we know that he was in a bad situation. His chief of staff came out, Mark Meadows came out and talked about how bad of a situation that President Trump was in. We know he was in a terrible situation from the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. He could have, instead of suppressing that, he could have came out and said, well, you know what? Like Boris Johnson, I'll give you an example. Boris Johnson, the UK, he came out in a video message to the English people. And he talked about how hard it was for him dealing with the coronavirus and how he empathizes with how the British people were dealing with it and how we're going to get through this virus together.
Yeah.
And Boris Johnson has not always been the most empathetic person. In some circumstances, he does compare himself in action and the way he carries himself to Trump.
Yeah.
But in that circumstance, especially, he did what was needed to help the British people confront this virus head on. And I think that he used his own personal suffering to help the British people. Trump didn't do any of that. He suppressed his own suffering. When he recovered from the virus, he took off his mask. And he was, once again, downplaying the importance of masks. And so when you go through something so life-changing, you could have used it to fuel the American people into doing better. But in this circumstance, he didn't. But also, I think it's important to consider that many of the establishment Democrats, speaking as a Democrat myself, many establishment Democrats have been talking about COVID regulations. Just yesterday, a Democratic mayor of a city talked about how people shouldn't travel during the coronavirus, and then he went out to travel himself. And so I think that whether it's Nancy Pelosi, whether it's the governor of California going out and eating dinner with his family while also restricting dine-in restaurants, it's that idea that like we shouldn't be hypocritical towards our own words.
Yeah.
Speak what you want to speak about wearing masks and safely dining in, but don't say, you know, that you shouldn't travel and go travel. Don't say that you shouldn't go out and get a haircut, but you go out and go to a hair salon. It's a valid claim that Republicans are making, that Democrats are being hypocritical. And I think that it deserves a second look. Once again, I want to reiterate that what Trump's doing is definitely not okay, but what the Democrats are doing, it sets a bad example to the American people in some circumstances.
Yeah, it reminds me of Chris Christie. when he would like shut down the beaches and then he would like be the only guy on the beach. And that's not just a point to like compare it to, oh, Republicans do it too. No, it's the fact that Chris Christie would shut down a whole beach just to go hang out on it. But I was reading as you were talking, I was looking into, the death of Robert Trump, Donald Trump's younger brother. And, you know, while I was reading it, Donald Trump's words were when he you know, shared the death of his brother, he said, it is with a heavy heart I share that my wonderful brother, Robert, peacefully passed away tonight. He was not just my brother. He was my best friend. He will be greatly missed, but we will meet again. His memory will live on in my heart forever. Robert, I love you. Rest in peace. You know, that's a beautiful message, and I feel like it could have been repeated a lot more and a lot more and a lot more. A quick thing before I start talking about my next point. When you read Donald Trump quotes, some of them sound really elegant. I don't understand how when he says them, they sound like so bad.
I have a real doubt that he writes them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Some of them, really some of them, some of them, some of them. But yeah. But even like some because he does go off teleprompter, or he does go off the teleprompter a lot,
right?
And I'm sure speech writers hate their jobs. But even there, like some of the things that he says, even off the top of his head, sound good. Like the repetition, like the, you know, he'll go back on a statement like, wow, what's his sentence structure is so odd.
Yeah,
he'll be like,
and
you
the
know
idea
what,
is that he never uses his teleprompter. He's always off the teleprompter.
Exactly.
But, and if he is, he's a terrible speaker.
And even when you read some of his transcripts, even off teleprompter, they sound good. But then you hear him say it and you're like, what is he saying? Like, you get genuinely confused. But either way, I was going to talk about Donald Trump here. He said, but we will meet again, obviously referring to heaven. He never mentioned God in his address, in this address, in this statement. But someone that did mention God a lot yesterday was Joe Biden. And I feel like a lot of Republicans and conservatives were scared that the Democrats are trying to take God out of politics. The Democrats are trying to take God out of politics. First of all, God shouldn't be in politics. But, you know, that the Democrats, you know, they're... That was a big
they're ungodly.
You know, Joe Biden isn't a man of faith. I think Joe Biden mentioned God yesterday more than Donald Trump did during his presidency, to be quite honest. And the difference is that when Donald Trump mentioned God again, and you know, per religious standards, who am I to judge another man's religion? But it didn't sound genuine. And it can't be genuine when you're not practicing what you're preaching. You know, you got to read your own Bible before you can recite it. And Donald Trump wouldn't go to church. Donald Trump didn't go to church. The only time he went to church was to hold the Bible upside down, during the riots and during the protests. So when you hear Joe Biden actually say it, you know, talk about God. And you know, he said that we were all created in the image of God. Right.
Yeah.
It kind of just shushes everyone. And I feel like it pleases the conservatives. It pleases conservatives, not the conservatives. It pleases conservatives. While also managing to unify those who maybe do not relate to God. Or maybe don't have the best relationship with him, or how maybe aren't even religious. You know, it's something that is a bold statement for those that care about it, and something that doesn't really bother or doesn't really have an effect for those that don't. Yeah. And I think that he did a good job mentioning God. I don't think that it stood out particularly, like I'm saying. It didn't stick out like a sore thumb. It felt kind of in place. Yeah. He always leaves, what does he say? He says, God bless... and God protect our troops. I don't remember the first half of that, but you know, he always says,
God protects our troops at the very end. It's like, God bless. God bless you all. God bless the United States of America.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it always feels in place with what he's saying. And I think that he's doing, I think that he's doing a good job unifying the American people thus far. What was it? What happened? Didn't the Dow also reach like record? I know we're not like an economical podcast,
right?
But the Dow reached record highs, and Donald Trump came out and said, we have some exciting, he hung up for like 2 minutes and was like, we have some exciting news. The Dow reached record highs. It's like, man, weren't you saying that if Joe Biden got elected, that like the stock market would crash? So when Donald Trump got elected, I don't know if you remember, but he took credit for the stock market, you know, shooting up.
Right, right.
But absolutely. Now that Joe Biden got elected, it's thanks to Donald Trump that the stock market's shooting up.
Look, I don't know about the validity of those claims. All I do know is that he's trying to trade credit for what may be somebody else's actions, and that's the only thing he's doing right now.
Well, I think
right?
it's Pfizer's actions, for beyond being Donald Trump's actions or Joe Biden's actions.
The vaccine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's the vaccines in general. And I think it's also Joe Biden, because Joe Biden has been instilling national, international acclaim for the United States. He's been reinstilling that hope in businesses and corporations to for an economy that's better. And I think that going past the coronavirus, distributing that vaccine is going to be Joe Biden's job. And I think that many businesses think that, and the market as a whole agrees that Joe Biden will be better in handling distribution than Donald Trump would be. I don't know how it's going to be carried out. I hope it's carried out well, but I think the market agrees with that. I'm not too economically inclined.
Yeah.
All I can say is that the Dow jumped. I don't know why. I don't know what's the
we don't know politics. Anything.
We don't talk about money.
The stock market. We should have brought
Brad on. Somebody else. Brad knows about the stock market. We have Tarun as well, knows about the stock market. We don't know about that. All I can tell you is that Joe Biden, you know, we talked about his religion and his faith, and the fact that he's going to become the second ever Catholic president of the United States is something to remember, right? Yeah. Because 60 years ago, JFK became president. Yeah. He was the first Catholic president, and now Joe Biden's the second Catholic president. And Catholicism has been a very, very discriminated religion in the past. People have discriminated Catholics for a very long time. In the United States, exactly. And they talked about during Amy Coney Barrett's nomination that they were discriminating against Amy Coney Barrett because she was Catholic. And I was like, well, let's not forget that Joe Biden's also a Catholic. And so it would totally disband the Democrats' theory to say that she was Catholic and should be nominated, but that Joe Biden is Catholic and should be nominated. Like, there's no basis for that. But the fact of the matter is that his faith has guided him in every single decision. Like, it's hard for a man, coming from my perspective, it's hard for a man to get through so much loss without a guiding figure. And for Joe Biden, that guiding figure was religion. For many Americans, it's not. But for Joe Biden, that guiding figure was religion.
Yeah.
And I think when you compare the two people, our president right now, Donald Trump, and our president-elect, Joe Biden, you see a stark contrast. You know, you talk about President Trump, and he's a very ungodly man. He brags about sexual assault. He separates families. And everything he does, the words he says, the way he carries himself, what he's done in the past, brags about sexual assault. That's the main thing to understand here. He has literally, like, Stormy Daniels, this whole Stormy Daniels affair, everything he has done has been ungodly. And I think that for him talking about faith and God, it's sometimes it comes off as super critical, right?
It reminds me of the time. Have I talked about the RNC event here with the pastor?
Oh, we a little bit. We talked.
Yeah, where like the pastor was like, Donald Trump is the perfect. He's a perfect Christian. He believes in the marriage between one man and one woman. And I think it was Jordan Kepler, if I'm not mistaken. That was
the one.
Yeah, it was
one
Kepler.
Man and one woman.
Yeah. He was like one man and one woman, and then Kepler was like, well, one man and then another woman when a prettier one shows up.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't get what you're saying. Yeah.
Let's also understand the significance of what he said, because that was one of the most blatantly anti-LGBTQIA quotes in the entire RNC. When he talked about the union between one man and one woman.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's so backwards. Right, we're in a different America today. It's not just about one man and one woman. It's about men and men, woman and woman, transgender people. It doesn't matter what kind of sexual orientation you have. You should be accepted by this president.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump, I don't know. He's not made explicitly anti-LGBTQIA comments, but the fact that transgender people are supporting and LGBTQIA people as a whole are supporting President Trump as they have in numerous in wide numbers and a wide array. It goes to show that, you know, this is an ideology that he supports, the Republican Party as a whole supports. And so it's the fact that that's going to be the overlying message of the Republican Party for the next 4 years, along with those 15 bullet points of absolute nonsense, in my opinion. Like it's the contrast has been extremely, extremely hard to fathom. And then I think that the number one time when I saw that contrast was when he selected Mike Pence as his running mate, President Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's a godly man, right? Mike Pence is a very, very Christian person. And the fact that Mike Pence is running on the same ticket as President Trump, being a, you know, once again, I'm going to say it again, bragging about sexual assault, Access Hollywood tapes, he was doing stuff with a porn star. I want to mention, and it's like these are ungodly things. And when I saw Mike Pence sign onto that ticket, sign his name beside President Trump as his running mate, I was like, well, how godly is Mike Pence to be associating himself and his whole family with somebody like that? I think that it's all political games. But beyond that, I think that using religion as a vessel to promote change is one of the most powerful things anybody can do, because people, on a whole, they like to be guided by this guiding figure, and that's God. And using God's name as a vessel can really help unify the country when it seems like nothing else can.
Okay. I want to ask you about, so you mentioned LGBTQ rights and like Donald Trump's response to them. What do you have to say to the fact that, you know, in the past, Joe Biden has made openly homophobic statements and voted on homophobic, you know, or bills that, yeah, that suppress LGBTQ rights. What's your response to a conservative, or how even me telling you that?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. You're right. Obama did it. Joe Biden did it. I saw his debate against Sarah Palin, talking about both of them were like, well, we both agree that LGBTQI people shouldn't be allowed, that marriage is a union between a man and a woman. He said that, right? Mm-hmm. But the important thing to consider here is that Joe Biden and Barack Obama, they both shifted their thought and they made a mistake, and they blatantly accepted their mistakes. But they both came out one after another. I think Joe Biden was first, if I'm not wrong. He was the first one before Obama to come out. I'm not saying it holds any weight, but he was the first one before Obama, and he came out and he said that, well, I was wrong. I was wrong, and I think that marriage can be whatever people deem it to be. But in that day and age, he was wrong. And I agree he was wrong. But the idea that people can change, that we talk about continuously, we talk about how cancel culture shouldn't be a thing. Me and you continuously say that people can change. People can morph their viewpoints like that guy who was converting KKK members. It's not the same analogy, but people can change their viewpoints. So we shouldn't shun a person based upon what he formerly believed as to what he believes now. Yeah. I think that when you accept the humility of how disastrous your statements were to a single community, and you accept the pain that you've caused, and you move forward towards it, yes, you affected some people, but what you do now matters more than what happened back then. Let's not move backwards and talk about who's affecting who back then, right? Because right now, what is happening? You're seeing President Trump and Joe Biden. We're not talking about Joe Biden from 2004, 2008, 2012. We're talking about Joe Biden in 2020. We're talking about President Trump in 2020. And what you see right now is a stark contrast. President Trump has, I don't know if he's really been a supporter of the LGBTQI community.
He hasn't. I mean, even with his nominations of judges, he has not been a supporter. He has definitely not been a supporter. He has definitely not been an ally. Now, to say that he is a strong adversary of the LGBTQ community would be a stretch. I think that it's kind of an under the rug thing that he stays away from. I don't think that he particularly supports it. His policies don't particularly support it.
Yeah.
Now,
I did one thing before about the whole situation with Joe Biden and them. I want to talk about how progressive Dick Cheney was about the LGBTQIA relationships. And back then in those debates with George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Joe Biden, Joe Biden was in that debate, I believe. Mm-hmm. It was Dick Cheney, Bush, Joe Biden, and Barack Obama. And during that whole conversation, every single one of them was blatantly anti-LGBTQIA. And the one person who was pro-LGBTQ was Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because Dick Cheney had a daughter who was a gay woman. And the fact that he was so internally and personally afflicted by the whole situation, he had to confront it. He had to blatantly come out and confront it and say, am I willing to sacrifice my daughter and her freedom over what I believe internally? And then I think that he was exposed to the idea that anybody should be able to choose who they want to marry, who they want to have relations with. It does not matter. Mm-hmm. What people do does not matter. Like, unless it affects you. Yeah. Right, and I keep saying that. But Dick Cheney, and I want to say it, he was very progressive on that issue back then, and that's something to remember.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was thinking the whole time, and you know, that's the thing. I feel like a lot of people always, you know, it's good. The best way to judge a person's character now is to look at, you know, who they were in the past. I think that is true. But I think that we cannot forget that I think Joe Biden actually mentioned it in his speech yesterday. In the Constitution, in the preamble, it says that we are doing all of this in order to form a more perfect union. It never says that we're going to form a perfect union, because that's impossible. Yeah. We're going to form a more perfect union. And now the United States today is not a country that has slaves, but in the past it was. The United States today is a country that allows women to vote, but in the past it was not. The United States today is a country that teaches black and white students in the same classroom, you know, at the same time with teachers of color, with teachers, you know, that may be of the LGBTQIA plus community. But in the past, it most definitely was not. The United States has evolved in order to become a more perfect union. And I think us as individuals evolve in our lifetimes. And a quote that I strongly, strongly, strongly believe is one from Muhammad Ali. He says, "The man who views the world at 50 the same as he did at 20 wasted 30 years of his life." And that's one of the only quotes on the podcast that I have recited perfectly, because I genuinely believe that quote. I hope I recited that perfectly. Damn, now I'm second guessing myself. But but it's true. It's true. If you view the world the same way that you did, you know, if you're 50 and you view it the same way that you did at 20, hell, if you're 25 and you view the world the same way that you did at 15, then you've wasted 10 years of your life. You have to be willing to adapt, to change, to view differences, to listen to different stories, personalities, have conversations with those that may not want to have a conversation with you, or hell, that you may not want to have a conversation with, in order to form a more perfect individual, in order to be a more perfect person. And if we all strive to do that, then we would all be better people. And I think that the United States as a nation made a stride in electing Joe Biden. I think that we took a couple steps back with Donald Trump. But sometimes you have to take a couple steps back to realize and to be thankful for what you had. I think that there is no time to appreciate the 44th president of the United States than now. You know, we looked at what just happened, what transcended over the past 4 years, and we're like, can we please go, 12 years back, go to 2008? And it was this idea of, yes, we can. We can. We can form a more perfect union. We can be more perfect individuals. We can change and transcend our train of thoughts, whether it be onto LGBTQIA rights, or in the case you were mentioning, Daryl Davis, who converted KKK members. Maybe we can transcend our ideas, our views. We can shift walls of bigotry that we have built up in our mind in order to form ourselves as more perfect individuals, and to strive to then be able to form a more perfect union. Because as Joe Biden mentioned, it is us on an individual level who have that responsibility. The Constitution, beyond setting up the foundation for our nation, outlines, you know, the Bill of Rights. It has 10 amendments that protect us. And it gives us a duty, just as it gives the federal government a duty, to become more perfect. The federal government only has, you know, a $20. Who the hell judges what a $20 bill is, if not us?
If we
do not give it value, then the federal government has no value. If we do not listen to the federal government, then it has no power. If we don't listen to the media, then the media has no power. If we do not respect democracy, then democracy has no power. So it is important. It is critical. It is imperative that us as Americans not only respect the foundations of democracy, but respect each other. And that, you know, right now, what that means is doing our patriotic duties, trying to form, you know, the commonwealth of the nation is also outlined in the preamble. And right now, the thing that's in the best interest for the commonwealth of the nation is to put on a mask.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you have to always consider how patriotic Americans are. And being patriotic right now is, as Joe Biden continuously says on social media and in speeches, it's your patriotic duty is wearing a mask, because we have to love one another. We have to respect the lives of one another, if not anything else about one another. It's just respecting our own lives. And I think that no matter what you think, and I've heard a lot, I was taking a quiz the other day at school, and I heard people talking about how the coronavirus was literally nothing. It was a virus that was like the flu, and we shouldn't take much heed of it. And I wanted to go off. I did, because I'm that kind of person. Mm-hmm. And I had to move myself from that situation because I couldn't deal with hearing that kind of stuff, because it's so blatantly anti-human.
Yeah.
It's anti-human. It's anti-American. It's anti-human. And I think that when you subscribe yourself to that propaganda, it's once again, it's part of the system, and it's a very sorry system to be part of. We have to get rid of that mentality that everything, that a virus that has killed 220,000 American people is nothing. And that term and that number has been used so many times on this podcast, because that number means a lot to a lot of people. It should mean a lot to every single American person. Mark of how much we have been through and how far we have left to go. Now, I want to talk about, when you talked about, I was remembering this as you were speaking, on the topic of changing your viewpoints and apologizing for what you've done. I think that it may be interpreted as hypocritical when I'm talking about President Trump and his, you know, boasting sexual assault with Access Hollywood tapes and doing things with a porn star, with the Stormy Daniels thing. I think that it may be interpreted as hypocritical that I said, well, Joe Biden can apologize for, being anti-LGBTQIA, but Trump can't, right? And what I want to say is that when Trump was confronted with the Access Hollywood tapes, what was the first thing that Trump said?
It's locker room talk.
Locker room talk. It's locker room talk. Is that an apology to anybody?
Yeah.
No. He literally accepted, he admitted he was using those claims. And he said it was acceptable for anybody to use those claims if it was locker room talk. He endorsed, in fact, in my view, he endorsed those claims. Mm. On the other hand, Joe Biden came out, and before he was so emotionally afflicted by the LGBTQIA community, I fact checked myself on this issue. He came out before President Obama did. And it made a lot of Democrats mad because they wanted Obama to be the face of the issue and the face of reform and change. But Joe Biden was so emotionally afflicted that he came out before President Obama. And he talked about how I evolved and I have support for the LGBTQI community and forced the issue into the national spotlight. And interpret it how you will, but he did that.
Hell,
and
the fact that we can even look at the same situation with the sexual assault allegations when it comes to Joe Biden. What was it that he said? He said, you believe these allegations, then just don't vote for me. Yeah. You know, because I wouldn't vote for a man that had these allegations.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. It's when you say, and you know, you want to know the most heartbreaking thing about this, Varun? It's not the president saying that's locker room talk. I mean, that's a man defending himself, right? That's a man defending his pride. Fair. It's fair game. I don't support it. I think that he should have come out and said, you know, I'm sorry for these for what I said. It was not locker room talk. What it was is talk of sexual harassment and sexual assault. And as a nation, we have moved past that. That is not who we are as a nation, and that's not who I strive to be as a man, as a father figure to my children, and to someone that hopes to be a father figure to your children, and you know, someone, a role model to your children. But instead, he does this locker room talk spiel, and you know, fair game. Again, it's a man defending his own honor, whatever. But what hurts is when other Americans say it. Oh, he didn't mean that. That was just locker room talk. Man, have you ever said that in a locker room? I've never said that in a locker room.
Of course not.
Has your dad ever said that in a locker room?
Absolutely.
Has your son ever said that in a locker room? It's not locker room talk. Yeah. It's not. It's talk of sexual harassment.
It's, you know, let's say it like it is. It's bragging about sexual assault.
Yeah.
Let's say it like it is, blatantly and clear. Now, when you talk about Tara Reid, Tara Reid, and Joe Biden and her allegations. When you talk about what happened back then, I think it was PBS NewsHour interviewed 74 of Joe Biden's past staffers, 60 or so who were women, and none of them had anything to say about Joe Biden. And sexual assault. Never heard about Joe Biden and sexual assault. Never heard any situations like what Tara Reid was saying. And they, in fact, said that Joe Biden was a supporter of gender equality in the office. And that's what I have believed to be. On the contrary, when you talk about President Trump and his allegations with many, many, many women, 26 sexual assault allegations, right? And they pick out Tara Reid and her almost, I would say, there is no other support for her allegation. Mm-hmm. There's no other people who can put evidence towards that allegation. when you talk about President Trump, 26 sexual assault allegations, some from minors, right? Yes. And that's the idea that the president of the United States is on trial today for sexual assault allegations.
That's the difference, that there's evidence.
Yeah. And there's multiple. It's replicated again and again and again. And when he continuously says it's locker room talk, it's fake news, it's nothing, he never confronts the issue like it is, right? And I think that you can... It's all about the evidence and what you have to say to the American people. You can take it in a very different light when you talk about Clarence Thomas. As much as I despise Clarence Thomas in the court, I think a lot of Americans, Democrats, despise Clarence Thomas. When he was confronted with the situation of a woman claiming sexual assault against him during the confirmation hearing, he responded to it very well, dignifiedly. He made me side with him emotionally. When President Trump says it, it's all like fake news, locker room talk. It's empty claims in which nobody can. I believe that I don't see any conceivable way for the American people to emotionally empathize with President Trump during that spiel. And I think that when you talk about changing, right? And I talked about President Trump and his inability to change. In my opinion, Joe Biden has performed same-sex marriages. He has performed same-sex marriages. He supports a YMCA initiative which promotes including those people with same-sex marriages. But the point to consider here is that not only does Joe Biden come out and apologize for being openly, I believe, anti-LGBTQ in his past, he comes out and even then, he never said that LGBTQIA people should have different rights and guarantees. He did support DOMA, but he never said that they should be discriminated against. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the fact that he literally he performs weddings for same-sex individuals says a lot about Joe Biden.
Yeah.
It says a lot about Joe Biden. And I think that when you talk about the kind of atmosphere that Joe Biden pervades of gender equality, of supporting anybody no matter what they believe in, I just don't know if Trump pervades any ideas about equality as a whole. I just don't. They talk about how he supported the black community, how he supported women in his career, supported working class women, but his rhetoric never says that. He never talks about how I've never seen Trump talk about how he supports gender equality. All I've seen is he comes out of his rallies and says, well, why am I not getting the woman's vote? Why aren't the working class women voting for me? And I think that's all he asks about, votes. People are votes. And that's all he thinks about. And I think that we have to get out of that mindset that people are votes. People are actually people. They're humans. And when we consider that, we become less anti-human, less anti-American, like I said before, and consider that people are people and we should respect people as they are people. And yeah. Until President Trump can consider that, he's still going to be privy to locker room talk, all these allegations, because he objectifies women and he objectifies the American people as votes.
Yeah, you want to hear the transition that I never thought I'd make on this podcast?
Go ahead.
Did you hear about the Charli D'Amelio situation?
What happened with that?
I'm not so into that. It was you were just bringing up the fact that he saw votes as numbers, and she was complaining about the fact that she had 95 million followers and she wanted 100 yeah. million, and like people yeah. were like, okay, so like, are we just numbers to you? And like in that situation, yes, you know, in that situation, yeah. yes, it's 90. You're following, for those of you that don't know, maybe some of the older listeners here on the podcast, Charli D'Amelio is a TikTok influencer. I think she's the biggest on the platform. She is.
I'm buying for
her. Yeah, definitely. And she does dances and that's what she's known for. And the way that social media works, I mean, how, you know, our listeners, for us, I feel like there's a more, I mean, we sit here and we talk. So we kind of have a more closer relationship, I think, with our listeners. I genuinely appreciate everyone that takes the time to listen to this podcast. But with her, she does like 15-second dances. And, you know, you hit a little follow button and then you follow them. That's all it is. So you give her a follow and in turn, she entertains you. I mean, that's how it works. Yeah. I mean, frankly, that's how the podcast works. You know, you give us a follow. And in turn, we keep putting out content for you guys. When you're the president of the United States, it doesn't work like that. We give you a vote, and we don't just expect to be entertained. We expect to be taken care of. We expect for 250,000 Americans not to die to a virus that did not deserve to kill 250,000 Americans, that should not have killed 250,000 Americans. We expect hate crimes to go down, not up under your administration. We expect the climate crisis to be resolved, not added to by your administration. That's what a vote for you is speaking of. It's not for entertainment purposes. You're not just another number. You know, voting is one of the most important, it's the most important duty that you have as an American. I wanted to talk a little bit about, because I've been trying to find this, and I don't, you know, now another transition, a more political one. I don't, obviously Media's Touch, right? Media's Touch.com. They put out these ads. They put out a couple ads, you know, here specifically.
Midas Touch, sorry.
They've put out a couple ads, here in Georgia. But I was looking at an ad for what's her name? Emily Murphy, the GSA director. I was seeing some allegations against her, and I don't want to bring them up if we can't specifically name them, but do you know that, did you ever get to see the Midas Touch ad?
I did not. I saw it on my phone just now, the Midas Touch notification. They had an ad out, but I haven't seen it yet.
No. Okay. They put out a couple on Kelly Loeffler, however you say her name.
Loeffler.
Yeah. Man, I always mess it up because I don't know why. It's like Loeffler, Loeffler, and it's something else. I always confuse them with. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. But there was an ad that was talking about like the fact that they were having like rooftop, like sex parties, and it was the weirdest thing that I've ever seen, and I just didn't know if you'd seen it.
Well, I think that what I want to talk about with the Midas Touch ads is that what they do is they do exactly what Republicans do. I think the Democrats need to do that more. It's hitting on the people behind those positions. The Democrats don't do it, right? Mm-hmm. When you see Ossoff and Warnock speak, they only talk about how, and me and my father have talked about this many, many times, but Ossoff and Warnock only talk about how, well, Ossoff and Warnock have these good policies. They're good people. They have big families. They never talk about Kelly Loeffler, Doug Collins, or in a sense, David Perdue, right? And the idea is that I think that we as Democrats, I as Democrats and our party have to be more progressive against Republicans. Right now, it's like, well, I'm a Democrat and this is why Democrats are good. It has to be, why is David Perdue the wrong choice? And I think Ossoff does a good job, but Warnock right now, with so much on the line, has not been doing nearly as good of a job against Kelly Loeffler when she's literally saying that Warnock's a socialist. He's a communist, and he has the most radical agenda of any Democrat ever. She said that, right? And there's so many points to hit Kelly Loeffler on, like about how she compared herself to Attila the Hun. There's many points to hit her on. But I think that Midas Touch, and it's funny, but it's true. And the fact that Midas Touch and these organizations, aside from Democrats, have been saying these kinds of things is good. It helps them out. But the fact that Warnock and Ossoff aren't really doing that says a lot about them. I think that Ossoff has a good message with Perdue and how he used his knowledge about the coronavirus to help himself in the stock market. But how long is that message going to last?
It has been a recycled message, and I feel like there's more that you can hit him on. But my thing is always is that I think that a big reason for that is the both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have been stretched in two different directions. I think that the head of this kind of shift in the Democratic Party was Barack Obama. He did not criticize Donald Trump. Democrats don't. I don't think they typically really have, you know, a history of straight up attacking the person that they're going against, right? I mean, even Joe Biden in the debates, he didn't say
shut up,
fair.
He
definitely had some remarks, but Joe Biden's also on the other side of the not saying nasty things. Joe Biden definitely speaks his mind a lot more often than I think most Democrats. But no, I've had the same conversation with my mom about, you know, Democrats, like, oh, you know, they never really, they don't attack Ossoff and Ossoff and Warnock don't attack
Purdue
and Loeffler, right? Loeffler.
Let's pronounce hers right, because she doesn't pronounce ours right.
Yeah, right. But either way, what was it? Purdue and the when he was saying Kamala's name. Oh, so
yeah, Kamala,
that was,
la.
Yeah, that was so talk, that was yeah. so stupid. That was
we
just,
had a whole big discussion about that. Yeah, that go back just, to our episode on. I forget which one it was, but we had a discussion. About
yeah, we
that.
Definitely. Well, it was that. It was just that was just dumb. But nonetheless, I see the same kind of approach being taken. I wonder if it's going to be effective. Obviously, we have about what, a month and a half till the runoff. I see the same approach kind of that they took in Miami, with calling Joe Biden a communist and a socialist and calling him a radical, being used by Kelly. Not even going to try the last name anymore. Being used by Senator Kelly against Reverend Raphael Warnock. It's this idea. They're communist. They're socialist. They're extreme. They're anti-police. They're backed by this. They're backed by that. Is it going to be effective here in Georgia?
Well, I have a interesting perspective.
Okay.
And my perspective is that when you take the head of that message in President Trump and he's not elected, how valuable, how recyclable, as you say, how sustainable is that message? Mm-hmm. Right? Because the guy who began the whole message of Democrats are radicals, Democrats are socialists, Democrats want to take away your everything, forget guns, everything. Want to take away your rights, that person is now fallen. No matter how hard it is for you to admit it, that person has lost the general election for president of the United States. He's not there anymore. Yeah. And I think that his ideas over time, and I hope they do, I hope his ideas are going to slowly dissolve, slowly edge out of the American people's minds. And I think that his message lost. So I don't know why they keep running on a losing message, a message that has lost. Let me correct myself. And so the question right now, it's not can they sustain using a message of calling Democrats radicals. It's if they can sustain using a fallen message, a message that has lost. And that, the answer to that question, I think you can answer it. No.
Well, to be fair, the message did win Florida.
It won Florida, but did it win Georgia?
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. It didn't win Georgia. I mean, it's gonna be a very interesting race, I think, to say the least. Here, it's a race for a Senate. I think that turnout is the thing that just needs to be focused on by Democrats.
Well, one more thing about the whole Georgia election.
Yeah,
and the fact that Georgia's election, I think, was more than not fueled by Republicans who voted against Donald Trump. I think that's why it was fueled. Because when you look at Georgia's history, ever since Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton, I believe, they voted Republican. And by large and astounding numbers, I think Republicans in this election went against Trump and voted for Joe Biden. So when you have the same message of, I voted with President Trump 99% of times, like Kelly Loeffler and Purdue are saying, I voted with Trump every single time. I push out Trump's ideas. How sustainable is that to those Republicans who did vote against Trump? And I think that if they morph their message to say that I'm a Republican, I'm a conservative, I support things like the Second Amendment, like Republicans are all in a consensus on, and I don't support Trump's rhetoric, that might win them the general election. But I think that using the same ideas that millions or thousands of Republicans in Georgia, I don't want to put out any false claims, but thousands at least of Republicans in Georgia voted against would just not be effective. They want to get as many Republicans as possible because Georgia is a red state. It has been historically.
Yeah. I went to David Perdue's website because when we reached out to Senator Perdue previously to come on the podcast, which we invite both, all parties mentioned here prior to come on the podcast. When I previously came on his website, it said Donald Trump's biggest ally or something like that.
Yeah.
It boasted about it. Right now I come on his website and there's nothing about it.
There's nothing
about Donald Trump. His picture, his mention, his likeness, it's not on the website. What is on the website, though, is a U.S. national debt counter that just keeps going up. I feel like that's the weirdest thing when you have a Republican president sitting in office. It's like, hey, look at the national debt going up. I'm going to change that as senator. That was just, I don't know. That was, well, just
if you
a couldn't
change it as, if your president couldn't change it.
Yeah, right. What are you going to do as senator?
The president you voted with 98% of the times. Right? If he couldn't change it based upon your votes, how can you, man? Like,
yeah. But either way, I think that the biggest ad for Georgia, the biggest ad that's going to win, I honestly, this election for me is a toss up. I cannot call it as confidently as the presidential election. This election could go either way, but you want to know what I think was the biggest advertisement for Democrats?
What was?
The fact that Georgia turned blue. And what I mean that is it's going to inspire Democratic, because I feel like a lot of people in the past, especially here in Georgia, and I've heard it a lot. It's been like, who cares? It's red either way. Georgia's red either way. Why go out and vote? It's red either way. You know, but no, we showed that, hey, it's blue. Georgia's blue now.
Yeah.
So if you want to cast a ballot that is, you know, going to favor the Democrats, it's not just going to be an unsung, you know, it's unfortunately because of the way that the Electoral College works. Your ballot really, you know, your one vote, if there's a vote to counter it, it doesn't matter. Because, you know, the president that wins the state gets all 16. It's not split electoral votes.
But then again, you got to think about state senators.
Yeah, absolutely. State elections. Absolutely. Representatives. Absolutely. And here, that matters. Here, that matters. Who was it that we talked about?
And I think also the Blackmun's runoff is coming up December 5th, I
yes,
believe.
Yes, yes, yes. Daniel Blackmun's runoff is coming off December 5th. I don't remember. I think
Georgia Public Service Commission is coming out. I'll look at it 1 second.
Yeah, go for it. Was it Ted Terry that we were talking with that said when like the Senate was up for grabs, we came out and like Democrats came out and voted?
Oh, it's December 1st.
December 1st. Okay.
Side note.
Okay.
The Public December Service 1st. Commission election for District 4, I believe, is Georgia's Public Service Commission is December 1st. Okay. And it's very important because Daniel Blackmun's had been a very, very avid advocate for proper energy usage and the environment, and voting in that election is going to be extremely important for us in the future, our generation. But go ahead.
And he's been a prior guest here on the podcast, so if you guys want to hear a little bit more about him, go listen to that episode. But I think it was Ted Terry that we had on. Oh man, I'm blanking completely on it. But basically, the Senate here is up for grabs, and I don't feel like that's being very, that's not being emphasized enough. You know what I'm saying?
I think it is.
Do you think so?
The opposite, because when you think about CNN, and Fox News more so. Fox News has been talking about this thing 24/7. CNN hasn't, because CNN's focused upon how Trump has been denying the election, and they keep running the same thing day after day after day about Trump not accepting results, which isn't going to change no matter how much they say it, but they keep saying it.
Yeah.
And I think that what they have to focus upon, Democrats as a whole, well, Democrats have been doing it, but CNN, major media news channels, they have to focus upon this election because that's the next biggest thing. Now, Fox News has. Mm-hmm. They've been talking about Raphael Warnock and how radical he is. They've been talking about John Ossoff and how radical he is. When John Ossoff, he has pledged not to defund the police, to reduce the national debt. He's as much conservative as anybody else is, right? When you look at John Ossoff's policies, he's very, very conservative. And they talk about John Ossoff wants to defund the police. Well, that's false, right? Mm-hmm. That's just a conservative talking point. I said the same thing about Joe Biden, about how Joe Biden wants to defund the police when Joe Biden blatantly has said he didn't want to defund the police. And that's just another conservative talking point. Now, I did want to mention that when you talk about conservatives not attacking liberals and just sticking true to their perspectives and talking about what they would do for you, my dad was talking about one of the ads that he saw on a website that he was looking at. I think it was one of the media news websites. And he was like, well, Vern, come over here and look at this ad. And I was like, what's so important about it? And he was like, well, Kelly Loeffler said she's going to defend women's sports. And I'm like, what's that all about? And he pulls into it, and it says that, well, women's sports are being taken over by transgender athletes, and that's why women's sports should be protected. And that's the kind of message that if they're not attacking Ossoff or Warnock, that's what they want, right?
Yeah.
That message is not going to get them anywhere.
That's so
it's not going to get them anywhere.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just a weird message because, like, no one's – like, that's so not even much. A conversation that's being had, man. Why are you saying that? Like, right. Like maybe –
we're in a global pandemic. Yeah, the economy is crumbling.
Maybe there's an argument to be made Right. Maybe there's an argument to be, but why make the argument? No one's talking about that. Why is that your focus?
I think there's a reason. The reason is that they don't want to focus upon the virus. They want to say everything is normal, right? That's their whole thing. They want to just say the virus is nothing. Yeah. It's like the flu. We shouldn't be considering it. Yeah. That's their whole mission.
Yeah.
And I think that doing that, and that is downplaying in a sense. When you talk about things that aren't even related to what's happening right now, relevant, people are dying. Like John Ossoff was saying at one of his rallies that I went to, I sat in on, I watched him speak. He was like, people are dying and they don't care. Yeah. And all they care about is these corollary superficial things. And I think that it just shows that how they want to downplay the virus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I get what you're saying. They're trying to act as though nothing's happening. So they're like, why talk about something that's irrelevant? They're thinking that the virus is irrelevant. But either way, with that being said, that's going to wrap up another episode here of Polititeen. I can't believe we've already hit the hour mark. We're at an hour and 3 minutes. That's crazy. This conversation has flown.
I could have talked for two.
Yeah, for two more hours. We could have kept going and going and going. But I want to thank you for, speaking of being thankful here on Thanksgiving, I want to thank you for adding to the conversation as you always do, bringing your unique perspective, bringing your knowledge and stuff that you research on and bringing it into this conversation. I want to thank the listeners for tuning in and listening to the discussion that we were having. It was awesome. It was amazing. I think this is one of the best discussions that we've had. I was very thankful for it. I'm thankful for every time that I get to jump on the podcast and talk to you. I really do appreciate it.
I would say to our listeners, go have a conversation with your families, because many people don't have that chair at the table. They have an empty chair right there, like Joe Biden continuously said. So have that talk with your families. Have fun. Have a great Thanksgiving. We'll be back next Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. And be sure to go follow us on Twitter, on Instagram. That's where you can see our posts. Stay up to date with everything that's happening podcast-wise. That's at Polititeen Show, both on Twitter and Instagram. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for tuning in to yet another episode of Polititeen. Goodbye.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeen Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/Polititeen Podcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.polititeenpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeen. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.